Pickaxe.
Jetzt nur du, dein Podcast und eine leckere Auszeit. Ab zu Aldi Nord. Für 2,99 Euro bringst du deine Mittagspause mit Sushi ins Rollen. Lecker. Und für 1,99 Euro gönnst du dir danach noch eine kleine Eiszeit. Bei Aldi Nord findest du immer das Passende. Klingt gut? Dann probier die Snacktime Sushi Box ab 205 Gramm für nur 2,99 Euro. Oder Mucki Sandwich Eis, je 8 Stück für nur 1,99 Euro. Das ist Gutes für alle zum Aldi-Preis. Jetzt in deiner Filiale. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Triforce Podcast!
Woo! Oh, welcome back everyone. Did you watch the animation?
I loved it.
Yeah.
It feels so professional. It was never meant to be so profesh, but it is.
When you say the animation, do you mean like the bouncing triangles from the last podcast? Mm. Or was there a specific animated segment?
No, that's what
I was talking
come later.
About.
Those will come later.
The bouncing triangles. What did you think of your caricature? I like the top of your triangle being quite shiny.
I like that. I felt that was either your touch or someone who knows the pain and anguish of having a shiny bald head.
Yeah.
Projecting that. Do you
have the whole Larry David thing where you're fond, particularly fond of bald other bald people you meet?
No, I don't really care for anybody that I meet. I really like women with lots of hair. Like that's my thing. If I see a woman, like George Costanza had that thing. He likes a woman. There's a great bit in Seinfeld where Jerry's saying to George, "What are you looking for in a woman?" He goes, "I like long, lustrous hair. You know, really long, thick, lustrous hair. It's very important to me." And then he strokes his bald head like subconsciously. And I feel like that speaks volumes. Like, you know, Larry David understands that being bald, you are instantly attracted to very long, thick, luscious hair on women. And if I see a woman with really thick hair down halfway down her back, I'm like, oh yeah, just let me touch
that hair. Do you reckon that's to do with being a teenager in the 80s, though, P-Flex?
Because I'm not talking about big bouffant like, hairspray
like
hair.
Hairspray queens, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like not like that. I'm
just
not into that.
Just a quick Google of 80s hair will bring up a whole bunch of incredibly like
a massive
fluffy
array of mullets and weird sort of valley girl fros with
hairspray. That's no good. Is that no good?
But so what do you mean there? Do you mean very long? Do you mean like waist length?
I just mean it has to be natural and it needs to be long.
Thick
hair.
Yeah.
And I like that.
More like a Mediterranean sort of, you know, like
that kind of thing.
Women
yeah.
from the Mediterranean always have very thick, sort of dark, long hair.
Yeah.
Only on their head though, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It has to be head hair because we don't want the beards.
I'm not about that bearded women, no.
Back sack and crack needs to be without hair as well, in my opinion.
Right.
I'm talking laser.
It's getting specific.
Because women on the continent do have very hairy backs. It's a true fact. I've seen it.
Can you laser your crack? Is that a thing? Are you allowed to do that? Or
are you allowed to laser your crack?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a more important question. Would you like to have someone shoot a laser at your genitals? Because personally, I'm not about that life. What if it goes wrong? It's a laser beam. It's a bit Blofeld-ish. You know what I mean?
I watched enough James Bond to know that a laser beam coming close to your groin is a bad thing. And usually somehow there's going to be a shark involved somewhere too.
Gotta be.
I feel like, no, laser beams near the crotch are like a huge no-no. Like I'm conditioned
now. Well, listen, James Bond did have that laser beam very near his crotch, but he was fine afterwards. So I guess, you know, it's not going to be... as long as you've got like a little lead like pouch around your man parts.
I know, but James Bond is only one example of a very
it's
close
like a
shave.
Coin purse.
What about all of those other international spies who didn't have the same good fortune James Bond had?
I mean, think, he's right. Sips
mutilated
right. Think
genitals
about it,
thanks to lasers.
Think about it. Like, Blofeld was like, yeah, I'll stick him in the old laser crotch destroyer. Like, he just pops him
How
in there.
How many people would be through that before? Yeah.
We call this one the mangler. No, my balls! No!
I mean, if you watch that scene, Blofeld isn't even looking at Bond. He's like turning away, chatting to the guy, like, hey, did you watch that new sitcom last night? What did you think? The guy's like, hey, it wasn't for me. He's like, hey, I like that show. If you want to end
like
up
the girl
in
with
the ball
bouffant
mangler,
hairdo.
Yeah, I love that big long hair. And Blofeld's
hey,
like, yeah, I
Donnie,
love long hair.
Hey, two times. Did you watch the show last night? Yeah, watched it two times. Hey
forget about it.
That's why he's called Tony Two Times. Because he watches everything twice.
He's got to. Yeah, he doesn't get it the first time. So he has to do like another pass to make sure that he gets it.
Definitely was that bouffant hair, like Elaine from Seinfeld had the big old, at least originally, she had that massive hair. It was,
but that,
it was just,
that wasn't necessarily what I was talking about. Let me just clarify, right? I'm not saying that I want a woman's hair
to
be
hairy women.
Huge.
We get it.
I don't want it to be puffed up with hairspray and everything.
Like Jennifer Lopez hair, right?
Let's have a look at Jennifer Lopez's hair. Lopez.
We're gonna
hair.
Google it.
Yeah, yeah. It's thick.
Yeah,
man.
That's some nice hair. And I like the way it goes kind of little, you know, wavy at the bottom and looks a little
like the girl from that 70s show. You know which one I'm talking about? The one with the dark hair.
I didn't like that show. That
no,
show,
I know,
70s
but
show.
The girl with the dark hair, whatever her name is, had
period
very
lived through the 70s.
Thick, lustrous hair.
Yeah, my life was that 70s show.
He
I was
knows
like,
how. It was, and it wasn't like
what
that.
What is this historical documentation doing on television? I don't understand.
So what you guys been playing this week, games-wise? You done anything fun? Done anything good?
I'm going to start. I've been on like a point-and-click adventure game binge recently. I picked up a game called Shardlight, which is like a sort of a throwback to 90s point-and-click adventure games. Very pixelated, low-res, sort of pretty good story, and it's been good. It's about like 8-9 hours to finish it, but it was cool. I liked it. I really enjoyed it. And then Day of the Tentacle, if you remember that game from 1993, was remastered and re-released. That came out this week, so I've been playing that too. So like I've just been playing point-and-click adventure games. But
did they re-record all the audio for it or not?
I think they did, yeah. It's pretty good.
Because I saw like a side-by-side comparison, and they sort of all they did was update the graphics. They didn't like they didn't like try and redo it, or
the graphics needed to be updated. They got rid of the scum interface, you know, like, so they made it more sort of you use the mouse to click through, you know, pick up, look at all that. There's a whole bunch of developer commentary, there's a whole bunch of concept art, you know, the typical stuff that they put into like a remastered. You know, Grim Fandango was the same. There was a whole bunch of like little extras and stuff. And it was the main thing is that it's now playable on a modern system, whereas before you had to get a DOS emulator and fuck around with a bunch of stuff or whatever. So it would have been harder to enjoy that game, which is like a classic. And now you can. Just got to pay more money for it. It's
the thing
trade-off,
about those
right?
point and click games I had a problem with was when I used to play them, because I remember playing the original Discworld point and click. Do you remember that?
I never played that.
No.
Man, it was fucking hard as nails. And you had to do the most obscure things, like put the rat in the phone or something. It was ridiculous. Like there were these ridiculous things that you just... When I was a kid, there wasn't guides. You couldn't go on the internet. You didn't know what to do. And so those games took me weeks to get through.
Yeah.
No, I remember me and my friend played Monkey Island 2 when it came out. He got it for Christmas, I think, the year that it came out. We were pretty excited. And it took us months to finish it because there was just little obscure things that we got stuck on.
But we experienced those games in such different ways, right, as well. Like, it would be this thing where it would kind of like be the... My friend would have his PC set up in the lounge and, you know, his parents would come around and look over our shoulder and, like, we'd be, like, throwing in suggestions. It was this completely different way of doing stuff. It kind of wasn't this thing that you... And I think nowadays, the danger of having the guide there, you know, at your fingertips basically means that you either try and play it hardcore and it can be really frustrating if you're trying to do it on your own, or you can just get through the whole game in about 25 minutes because the guide shows that the game is actually really, really short. Do you remember Full Throttle? I think that was a sort of point and click.
It was, it was probably, that was probably one of the last LucasArts point and clicks that came out that actually did well sort of thing. It was, I think that was sort of the when the genre was dying out, because I think adventure games as a game genre now are pretty much dead. There's always been like a couple that have come out over the years, and people think that there's like a bit of a revival or whatever, but I think it's a type of game now that's just not as compelling as it was. Like, I don't think people need that kind of game anymore with so much out there and stuff. It's nuts.
Do you know what I think it is that a lot of games now have so much of that sort of at a puzzle element to them anyway, that it, like, games back then were much simpler and you couldn't diversify as much, so you couldn't have a shooter that also had puzzle elements and the discovery elements and that kind of stuff in it as easily, because games were just not capable of being that big and varied.
Yeah.
So I think if you specify an adventure game that's point and click, it feels really simple. And I mean, for instance, if you look at something like Firewatch, for instance, which I wasn't a fan of it, but it is essentially a point-and-click adventure that's 3D.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I think it's quite similar in a way that the games now have said, well, we can still do that, but in a different and more sort of expansive way than just having a simple 2D pixel art, guy walks into frame, goofy line, and
it's
combine the gum with the guy's ear to steal his earwax and then use that on the machine. And it's just,
well, I mean, that's like, I mean, there's different types of adventure games too, right? And the two that I mentioned to begin with, Shardlight and Day of the Tentacle, are at, you know, polar opposite ends, because Day of the Tentacle is a LucasArts adventure game, which were really well known for being very funny, well written, kind of wacky and zany.
23-year-old game.
Yeah. But a lot of the times the puzzles aren't really straightforward. You know, there'll be really obscure things that you have to combine together because they set up jokes and they sort of add to the, you know, universe that you're in or whatever. Whereas Shardlight's a much more serious game and the puzzles are a lot more sort of apparent, you know, like you use a crossbow to shoot something. It's like really straightforward. Whereas I don't think a LucasArts game would let you get away with that, you know, just the sort of thing that you would expect, you know, like I'm going to pick up the gun and I'm going to shoot it. It has to be some long convoluted thing that eventually leads to somebody else shooting the gun or something that sets up a joke or whatever. So it's a bit different, but the point that Pyrion made about Firewatch being a point and click adventure, I would agree with that. The difference with Firewatch is that because of the way that it was and the way that the game like sort of presented itself as an experience to you, there was a lot more atmosphere in the game that you don't get in a point-and-click adventure game, I don't think. Because you have such a different view of like a 2D adventure game, right? You don't feel totally immersed in it, you know? You're not scared to see what's around the next corner. You're not scared by like a phone call coming to you in the middle of the night or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like you have a different sort of view of the game. Whereas Firewatch, you do feel like immersed. You feel like you're the character sometimes, you know. It's in the middle of the night and then the fucking radio goes off and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to shit my pants. Like, this is kind of scary and stuff, which you don't get in like a point and click adventure game. So it's different experience, I guess. But you know, they're all pretty good games.
I also just think maybe people sort of have changed their what they want from a game. Like maybe the mass market for point and clicks just isn't there anymore. Like you get, like how many Westerns get made these days? You know, not many.
No.
And that used to be pretty much all that was made. If you turn on Film 4 or BBC 2 or whatever, you're flicking around during the day for a movie, it'll be a friggin' Western because they're cheap as chips and there's a billion of them and they're all the same, right? But at that time, people loved watching Westerns and now Westerns are super rare and they only really come out, they're like ultra gritty and grim and True Grit or what was that one called?
The thing is, right, this makes me think that it's bringing up all these memories because I remember, I think I've played every fucking point and click, right? Because, I mean, I just brought up Full Throttle, but I played all the Broken Sword games. I've played Sam & Max. I played all the Monkey Island games. I think there was even a Star Trek point and click that was one of the first games I played.
Yeah, there was.
I played all of them. And do you know what? I have fond memories of all of them, like, in a way. Like, I don't think I've enjoyed the Monkey Island games since about the second one, but I know there have been about five because I've played them all. And I think it's kind of this It's a little bit like Sorcery, you know, the iOS game that's now coming out on Steam. I think it's, is it out on Steam very soon? Sorcery 3 and 80 Days. Have you played those? They're yeah. great iOS games where it's almost like a story game with a little bit of a puzzle element in there. And, you know, it's got RPG elements in Sorcery and things like that, because you do sort of bring a little inventory in. And it's like those adventure books. So in many ways, I think a lot of these early games were bringing a book into a sort of a virtual world and adding like this extra thing. And in the same way that a movie is a visual display of a story or a book, or, you know, and these things are all linked. I think that we... Do you know what? I don't think there's less of games. I think there's just more of all games. I think the gaming industry has grown 10, 100,000 fold since 1993. Yeah. And if you want to get good point and clicks, they're still coming out. If you want to get Space Sims, you know, Master of Orion's being remade. You know, we're playing it and, you know, we don't rate it particularly because maybe we've just moved on since, you know, maybe we don't want a remake of an old game like StarCraft 2. I don't want a fucking remake of StarCraft. Fuck StarCraft. StarCraft needs to be innovated upon and made better. Like, fucking, the thing I hated most about StarCraft 2 was that it was StarCraft, right? I wanted some fucking innovation. I didn't want a remake of a game which I don't want to play anymore. I wanted like stuff where I didn't want to have to click a button for every single Marine, okay? Every other RTS, you right-click on that button that builds a Marine and it auto-produces Marines, okay? That's one of my tiny examples about why StarCraft 2 is shit, right? It's shit because it's just too fucking... nerdy, too much clicking. It makes me mad because I think I'd like to play RTS. I'd like to play a really polished RTS. I'd like to have a go at it again, but I don't want to play it the most tedious game in the universe. I know. I feel like there's good balance, right?
I think the thing with StarCraft 2, specifically when it comes to that, is that they wanted to make it not accessible to, but to appeal to pro gamers and to have that high skill cap. And if you can just click auto build, that would be great for filthy casuals like you and me, Lulu. But when it comes to like playing that at a high level, it takes away a huge amount of the skill of macro and micromanagement that makes StarCraft appealing. Yeah. I don't want to play StarCraft. I stopped playing it a long time ago when I got into Dota. But for instance, to talk about making things easier, this patch is coming out for Dota, this spring cleaning patch that makes some things that, in my opinion, should be there to help people, right? Yeah. And they're like, people are like, this is dumbing it down for the idiots out there. What is this, a mobile game now? You know, it's like, no, calm down. It's just you click on a tower, you can see the tower's attack range. Why does that need to be a secret?
When are they
going
to cater to me, though, PFlex? Okay? I'm a high level player, all right? I don't need any of these features, so-called, quote-unquote, features that they're adding to the game to make it simpler,
I don't even
okay?
need to be able to see my hero.
I'm doing wrestling entrances to tournaments on a jumbo jet, okay? And what I need from this game is the competitive edge, okay? I need them to make it more difficult because I actually have 15 fingers and a highly developed brain as well. And
God,
these
loads
these
of
changes
examples.
Are for kids. For
there's loads
for
of examples
kids.
In Dota. Like, one of the classic examples in Dota is that you are running away from some guy, okay? Like, let's say he's a guy with a stun, like a Vengeful Spirit, okay?
Right.
And he, you don't know whether he's got enough mana or not, but you can click on him to see how much mana he's got, but it's not shown above his health bar like yours is, okay? Right. There used to be mods and things like this in games that like Heroes of New Earth that would add that. And there used to be mods in Heroes of New Earth that would add, for example, with Shadow Fiend. You play Shadow Fiend or whatever he was called in Heroes of New Earth, and you'd be able to see where the razors were coming down. And it would be this... And do you know what? You can do these things. These things do exist, and they're on Dota, and they're called training games or mini games. You know, there's a mod in the Dota Workshop where you can go in there, and you can actually go to a thing, and it will show you all the ward spawn boxes, and you can put wards down, and you can test, and you can learn. It's like a training arena. So, I mean, I can see when people are arguing these don't need to be in the main game, these arena bits. But at the same time, they enhance the game. You want to make enough changes that enhance the game and allow the game to be accessible and fun without it being this tedious shit. I don't want to fucking go into this stupid mini game like stacking camps in Dota, right? It's cancerously bad. It's no fun when your camp doesn't stack. And and it's not because you've, it's because you've clicked it at the wrong time, or it's because, do you know, you have to learn individually each camp, where to pull, when to pull, like how to pull, how many it can do. You have to learn that for like 15 fucking camps, and it's...
Is that, but that, I mean, that's a really good example, because that's something that I always just assumed. And if you don't know much about Dota and camp stacking and stuff, I'm sorry, but I mean, I'm not going to explain it. I don't think either of these guys are going to either.
No.
Anyway, it's I would say that it's an obscure mechanic, okay? Somebody who's just starting to play the game or learning how to play the game will not know about that. And that sort of leads me to believe that maybe it wasn't intended design. You know, like, I don't think that when they were designing Dota 2 as a game to be played, they really considered that people would actively do that, or it would become this, like, staple high-level strategy sort of thing. It's something that I think players just started doing, and it became like a popular thing to do, and now it's become so part of the game. But it seems like kind of a shame that it has become part of the game as well, like, because it takes away focus from the fun elements of the game and forces you to do this really dumb shit in the game just to, like, sort of keep up, because you know the other team is doing it. You know what I mean? Like, you have to do it now.
I really like it. I like it because it does add a tactical element to the game. And I think it would be bad to remove that kind of stuff, or to not reward it. And the idea that you have to do something because the enemy's doing it, well, then the response that you do to that, and we had this in a game the other day, is they stack the camps and you go as a group and steal their stacks. So it's like, or you can make your own stacks, or you can just lose because their carry's going to get more farm, or you can, you know, there are multiple responses to that situation. And I kind of like that variety. And I also think what you were saying about how the camp stacking was probably an accident, I agree. It almost certainly was a simple check. Like, so imagine that you have these little areas in the jungle, which is sort of a neutral area, and there are monsters that just randomly spawn on the minute mark on that location. If there's nothing else there, either an existing neutral enemy or a player or an observer ward, right? So what you can do is go and attack the enemies. They'll follow you out of the spawn box. If there's nothing in there, some new neutrals will spawn in. You walk away. The original neutrals now go back, and you have twice as many there. And you can repeat that like 3, 4, 5 times. So you get these what we call stacks of guys.
Yeah.
Now, that is worth doing. But it's also a risk reward because the enemy can come and farm them. Or,
listen,
you know, I like
think
that.
The broader topic here is, I think it's a little bit like the psychology of gaming, in a sense that, you know, why they put those little puzzles in Mass Effect or whatever. So when you're going or picking locks, right, in Fallout, it's to break up the repetitive shooting, right? It's you know, it's why in Wolfenstein, which I really enjoyed, actually, I last week I talked about how I really enjoyed The New Order. I really enjoy it. I thought it was great.
Man,
story.
I feel like Wolfenstein is going to be something that we end up talking about every week somehow. Like, it's just one of those things where
I played,
like,
the DLC, right? Which is called The Old Whatever.
Is it any good?
The Old Whatever.
It was crap.
Something. The Old Whatever.
I didn't enjoy it.
It's crap?
I didn't rate it at all. I didn't rate the DLC at all,
man,
compared to the original game. It just didn't hold up to any of the... It felt like this thing that was like, oh, okay, we better rush this out because we agreed to do one. And it was just unfortunate that it was in comparison, it wasn't good. But the psychology of these games, like, is that it breaks up that pace. And so I think that whether stacking in the jungle was intended or unintended, I think that it gives players things to do that breaks up the fighting and the laning, and it's a different thing. You know, it's that same thing. You just need a simple, like, lockpicking mini game in Skyrim to break up the wandering in the wilderness and the killing of undead. You know, it helps to have these little mini games in games. You see them more and more. It is a bit of a psychology thing. I think that one thing, just very quickly going back to what we were sort of talking about with point and click games, I think some games have used the game and the power of 3D and the power of things really well. Like, one thing I would love to say is The Room on iOS 1, 2, and 3. They're all great games. If you haven't played them, you really should. They are fantastically clever, little, good, really enjoyable puzzle games that could not be done without a computer. Okay? They just couldn't. And they are
imagine playing Dota without a computer.
Right. No, I'm sorry. Like, in the sense that...
Stacks of camps. Oh my god! I need the paper clips. Oh jeez!
In the sense that 80 Days and Sorcery are very they're enhanced by being in the computer, but but I think that it's so, I don't know, the room, it's just so unique. So do you have any games that you are absolutely like in love with and you want to see more of and you can't play enough of?
Me?
Yeah.
My imaginary version of Civilization that I've been working on for about 3 months.
Okay.
I've been working on this imaginary version of Civ 6, and I've been writing this big list of documents, and I've been thinking about
how it
works.
Is your like house right now like Russell Crowe, A Beautiful Mind, with paper everywhere and ideas, and your wife is just like, not Civ 6 again, period. Jeez, stop it. Stop talking about Civ 6. But it's a great idea, honey. It's gonna make the big time. Sid Meier's is going to want to suck my dick after I'm done with this one.
I'm actually, if you go into my living room, I'm generally sat there in my underwear. There's like candles around. And in the middle of the living room, there's like a framed picture of Sid covered in like kiss marks. And all my notes around that. And occasionally I say a prayer to MicroProse Games or whoever made the original Sid.
You got the candles, you got like the tribal music and stuff. History books are all like open at certain points and everything.
I just like, they were wrong about the Byzantine era. I knew it. This is going to change my notes about everything. I'm like scrapping a whole wall just quickly.
So is this something you do in the shower and then or you go to bed thinking about and then scribble some notes or
no? I've started to take time out every day to instead of just napping. Like I used to be on two naps a day because I love napping it up. Right. So
nice.
I trimmed that back.
I respect that.
It's great. I've trimmed it back to one nap and then one thinking time. Okay, and I
meditation.
You could call it that. I just made it up. It's a completely new original idea, right? You can call it meditation if you want. I call it thinking time.
It's dad's thinking time.
Patented period thinking time. So I lie on the sofa. I cover my eyes so it's like dark. I'm listening out. The kids are playing. They're drawing and stuff like that. And I'm just like zoned out. The TV's off and everything. And I'll just let my mind sort of wander and I'll just think. But I won't worry about stuff. Like I won't sit there. My wife, if she has any spare time, she worries. That's what she does with her spare thinking time is she frets and she plans and she thinks, oh, we should really get this done and we've got to worry about that. Whereas I just zone out everything and I just think, I just let my mind wander and imagine stuff. So I've started thinking about Civ 6. So I'm imagining sitting down and playing my imaginary version of Civ 6 and the stuff I'd like to see in it and how I think the game will play out and the stuff that I think has gone wrong, and I really think over the mechanics of Civilization and what I would like to change, and then how I would fit that into my version of Civ.
Nice.
This is amazing.
It's been really interesting.
I love this.
It's been really
interesting. Do you know what this reminds me of, right? When I was a kid, I used to love playing Warhammer, and me and my friend used to play Warhammer. We can't be more than about 9 or 10, right?
Right.
Yeah. And the time when I played Warhammer was the time when Necromunda had just come out, and it was this big thing that they were promoting all the game shops. And whenever you go into a Warhammer shop, it's always a cycle, right? It's like Blood Bowl. I think I missed Blood Bowl, right? But you were a little bit older than me, so you were the Blood Bowl generation, right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
but bear in mind,
there
weren't Games Workshop stores the way there are now, like all over the place. It was rare. Like there were hobbyist stockists.
Well, there were
that
when
you go
I was
into
a kid.
Model shops and stuff. But
It was a new thing then. And so Necromunda was this sort of arena battle game. Anyway, I built this whole thing up in my head as a kid. Because this is what kids do. They're so creative and inventive. Anyway, I wrote this incredibly massive, long-winded story and document about how, like, you know, about this gang that I created and how I envisioned it fighting and all these scenarios and all this stuff. And I sent it all into White Dwarf, who's the Warhammer magazine. And they sent me a very nice letter back saying, oh, you know, thank you for your great ideas, you know, oh, we're really looking forward to having a go at your campaign and stuff. And then I think they sent me another letter back saying, we tried out your campaign, it was like so hard. all of our like squad died. They were really nice and accommodating to my 9-year old foolish self. But that's what I can sort of envision you're a little bit like now. You've just got this. You're like, it's
like
almost
a 9-year-old Lewis Brindley.
Is that how they signed off the letter? You're a fool, Lewis. sincerely, Games Workshop, all of us.
P.S. You will never work here.
You
ever.
Will never. You will
you are
never
now
work in this industry, you clown.
Man, no, poor so, Lewis. So, I imagine P-Flex wakes up in the morning in, like, the Buddhist temple on, like, top of a lonely sort of, you know, mountain, like, in Thailand, looking out over, like, this wonderful landscape. And he, like, descends to his brothers, and they all nod, and, like, they're all wearing, like, a T-shirt that's, like, civilization, you know, it's, like, kind of all... They've got robes, but they're, you know, in a specific style. And then he sort of goes out onto the balcony... And he sort of does a prayer to MicroProse, and then he sits down. He's got his like fingers like pinched together, like you're about to snap, you know, like this. And you just go, ba ba ya tu ya tu, like sing the holy theme of the people.
Yeah, you like walk into a temple, and Sid Meier's just sitting on a throne, and you just give him that knowing look, and then out of nowhere, like a lightsaber appears, and you just chop his head off. And then you sit down on the throne. You're like,
exactly,
Civ 6, motherfuckers.
Now I will make Civ 6.
Oh man!
Yeah. So tell me, do you have any of your notes?
You some examples. Yeah, I've got the notes. I'll give you an example. Okay.
Oh, this is amazing.
So think about the way, and this is true of pretty much all 4X games. All right, how do they handle population growth? You make. Here's how they handle it.
No, this is like a geography lesson.
It's always just with the food, right?
I didn't know what I expected.
Just wait. So here's how they handle population growth, okay? You make more food and more people turn up. But that's not how it works. It's supply and demand. If you have more people, you need more food. So what I'm thinking is the population will continue to grow, but you better have farmland there to support that population. And also think about this. It's not like the government says, you, go out and farm that field. They just, like, farmers exist. That's how they make their living. Same as people who are lumberjacks or cattle ranchers or whatever. That's what they do. And the government benefits from it and tries to, like, protect society. And so I want to be more about the macro management stuff rather than literally saying, we need a road between this town and this forest. So I like the idea of, if you're using a lot of trees, like if I want to build spearmen, we're gonna need some trees for that. You know, we're gonna need some metal for the points and stuff. So you start off with a sort of vague view of your surroundings, but rather than have I want to build a city here, but it's three tiles short of that forest, and it'll need to be near this hill. Like that's stupid. There's no way that people are gonna go. It's just too far for us to get to that vital resource. I hate that. So I want it to be more about a province and the people expand so that you get an idea of the fact that, well, we're using this forest and we're using this river and we're using these hills, so we consider this part of our shit. This is our shit right here because we use it. So if you can, you know, legitimately lay claim to the fact that you're using a forest, that's your forest. That's how shit works. It's not like there's a hard border that exists. There's three tiles in this direction, that direction. That's bullshit. It makes it like a board game. I want it to grow in relation to the geography and how you use it.
I mean, do you want your people to be kind of free, like the free market? Because that's kind of how it's supposed to work, you know?
Like, yeah, no, I like that idea.
So, like the one-child policy. So would your policy be like the six-child policy, you know? So you'd control how many kids people are having.
Well, I mean, let's say you want to help grow the population. For instance, don't have any wars, right? Wars should cost population. That's where soldiers come from.
Wars only kill men. They don't kill women.
But the point is that is still population, isn't it?
It's still population.
What are you talking about? Wars kill women too. World War II, civilian casualties made up the sort of bulk of the 55 million people worldwide that died during World War II.
Oh, yeah, but back in the day, we're not talking about modern war is very different, but even so, a lot more men died in World War II than women.
I mean, consider that entire cities were obliterated, like with carpet bombing and stuff. I don't think that that's the case. Like, I think lots of people died.
Troop losses, you could say. Obviously, they were almost all dudes. But either way, it's still costing you population. Men are people too, Lewis, you monster, all right?
That's true, but it's not quite so... I mean, obviously you're going to lose population. I think it makes sense, Pyrian, that would affect...
It would. So you've got your little city there, and you've got like 8 population or whatever. You shouldn't just be able to churn out dozens of units, because where are all these dudes coming from?
Yeah.
You don't just make a bow and a man appears to hold the bow. So you wouldn't be able to have a civilization that's just expanding this vast military beyond the the means of its population. So let's say you want to gear up for war. You're thinking, we need some more people. So I'd have, like, instead of just a city-state, there would be minor nations. And taking them out, you know, if you want to, you could do that. Obviously, you'd become, you get the whole warlord thing. You'd be more of a kind of... And that would shape your people. So decisions you make would shape what kind of people you have in your society. So if you're the kind of society that's going around crushing people, dominating people, that's going to have an effect on your national character, because you're known and your people are part of that system of oppression and conquest. So you're not going to, you know, there will be benefits. For instance, perhaps in that scenario, you might have less culture and artists, but you might be very good at, like, military science and production and stuff. So your civilization would be shaped not by some decision made on high, like, I'm going to be rational now because I've researched rational. It's like, well, no, because what have you done to actually grow to that point? Like, if you've built a lot of libraries and you've focused on science and stuff, your civilization is going to be more of a scientific civilization, and their nature will be defined by their history. So I like that. So I want to see it grow rather than just a simple, very board gamey choices of we're going to build it here so I can get this horse and that hill and that tree and that mountain. I want it to be, well, we've been using that river and we've been using that tree, so that's our borders. Those are our boundaries, and it grows and little towns and villages and shit. I love all that stuff.
Man, so I think that we just need to put you in contact with Firaxis, get you
in
there.
You know, like,
and you could do a presentation.
The level of detail that you've, like, put into this and the amount of thought that you've put into this, I do the same thing, but I want to redefine pornography. Like, I think I think that the staple sort of, hey, your pizza's here. Oh, but I don't have any money to pay you with, you know, like, it's been done.
When was the last time you watched?
We're sick of watching that pornography, okay? We want to see something new and fresh and, like, you know, how about, like, two people working on an oil rig and it's like a forbidden love? That's the pornography I want to see, okay? I'm sick of the pizza boy.
Have you not noticed the way porn has changed? There's no story. Where's the story? No, it's just there's a woman there. She shows you her tits and she shows you all her goodies, and then some erect penis just hovers into view, boom, we're at it. There's no story.
You know, and the potty
ghost
mouth
penis
as well.
Hovers
it's
into
like,
view.
You know, come on, give me a bit of dialogue. You know, like, let's have, like, a bit of lead up. Like, oh gosh, looks like there's been a rupture in Sector 6. We better go check it. Oh, I've got a huge boner right now. Well. Let's
and then
get
it just
on.
Turns into oil rig management. I would love to watch some of that.
You know? Yeah. That's just an example. You know, there could be, like, other stuff. You know, like, what about cops on the beat? You know, be like, yeah, we got a 187 reported at Frank's Liquor Store. Can you copy? Sorry, I'm blowing a guy in the back of my cop car.
Unable to copy. I have a code 69 going on in the back of this car.
Oh, Jesus.
69, oh my God.
Someone needs to clap for that. Wow.
Somebody needs to get on all of this, because I'm getting bored over here, okay?
Yeah, like
it's the same shit over and over and over, and, like, I want a bit of pizzazz.
Pizzazz.
I don't want pizza, I want pizzazz, okay? Like, let's take the pizza out of pornography, okay? Never again should they make a pornography video or movie with that storyline in it. They do.
They've stopped,
I'm sorry.
Like 20 years ago.
Yeah, you're watching your 1990s VHS.
You're still watching the old VHS over and over again.
I know. I found them in my friend's basement. They were his dad's. He had a whole stack of unmarked VHS tapes, like, in the boiler room of his house.
Wow.
And then we watched them. Yeah. And that was it. It was all pizza delivery and tennis lessons. What fucking tennis lessons? I mean, come on. Nobody's having sex at a tennis lesson, okay? Oil rigs, though. You never know.
Yeah, forget
you're out there.
Oil rigs.
You're isolated. Ooh. Yeah, you know.
It's just two guys.
Two dudes, you know.
On an oil rig.
Two guys out there, you know, working hard but playing harder.
And there's a helicopter coming in with a set of supplies.
Yeah. And the supplies just happens to be.
Good-looking tennis coach.
Yeah, like a bunch of, like, masseuses
lube.
And
lube. What are we going to do with all this lube?
Oh, jeez. Looks like they got the delivery wrong again. What are we going to do with 3,000 gallons of lube?
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. All right,
can I tell you more about my... Just one more thing about my Civ 6 thing, because I want to see what you think about this idea, okay?
Okay, I'm ready.
So, you know the way you've got your gold and you've got your tourism and you've got your research and all that? I thought another resource that you could develop and spend would be called authority, okay? So your authority represents how well you've managed your people's needs and security and how much faith they have in you, and also the punishments you've meted out to sort of give you the authority that you need to do things like, say, build a castle. You build a castle, so you'd get some authority from that. So if you wanted to do things like change some laws or do something, your authority would be affected by that. And you can then spend your authority on various things I haven't come up with yet, but I'll come up with it. But it's like a measure of your power and your influence and how likely people are to do what you tell them and be happy and not rebel, because you've got the authority level to keep them in check. And you get little quests from your population, like, there are some bandits fucking up my shipping route. Can you handle that? And you do it and you get some authority, or you fail to do it and you lose some authority. So it's kind of like a flexible resource as well. And I kind of like that idea of your authority is not based on how many fucking stadiums you can build, because it's not like the lack of football stadiums and zoos is what's keeping Britain from turning into open revolt. It's the sense that there's an authoritative power in charge and our needs are more or less met. That's what keeps us in check, not fucking circuses. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I wouldn't underestimate a circus at the same time, though.
Well, it would have to be one hell of a circus, Sips.
I'm talking like the Moscow city circus, you know, the dudes that can like contort and stuff.
You like that, huh?
Yeah.
Now that's a setting for a porno right there.
That's a great one, yeah. We're just in from Moscow for a circus. Oh, don't have any money to buy a ticket. Well, will this do? Yeah, it will actually. Fuck.
How about
Not this guy again.
He just turns up. Yeah. Hey, how about a pizza? Get out of here, you bum. We're oil rig workers. It doesn't make sense. How'd you get here? Come on.
Man, your Civ 6 ideas are pretty good. I'm not into Civ enough to fully appreciate them, but I think if you're a Civ buff, maybe like those are really good.
Yeah, they'll tear it apart, but I don't care. I've got all kinds of ideas.
I like it. Do you know what? It's a little bit like your religion, you know. It's your religion. It's your peaceful place right now.
Yeah.
People can't break that down. People can't tear that apart.
They can't take it away from you.
It's mine.
Oh. Pyrion's Imaginary Civ 6 is a game that I play in my head, and you can't touch that.
Yeah.
It's the MC Hammer of thought. You cannot take it away
from
me.
Maybe with a laser we could get it.
No, you can't laser it out.
It sort of makes you think, like, if you could play a game right now, even a game that doesn't exist, I guess for you it would be your Civ 6.
Just to see how it goes. I'd like to work on it.
For me, I would love to. And some games have tried this before and failed. There's been a couple of different... It's got to be a city builder for me, because I love playing city building games. But I want to play a city builder that feeds into something, right? Mm. So you have like a city, and like, I'm not talking like a modern city. Like, I'm talking banished, you know, like...
Right, yeah.
Old style medieval hamlet, and then you build it up into like a town and a city and stuff. But I would love to have something that I fed into that other people did, you know? So you'd have a region or like a county with a couple of little towns in it, and... You know, you could trade between the cities. You could make resources that fed into it. You know, somebody could sort of develop some sort of kingdom or something and decide to go to war. And then they could come to you, try to get taxes from you or like resources from you. And you could say, no, I want to stay independent. I don't want anything to do with this or whatever. Or, yeah, you know, I'll supply this and stuff. And I think that would be awesome. I would love to play that, but I think it'd be very, very hard to make.
Yeah.
And it'd be very hard to get it right. But I just love that. I love starting with nothing and building something, but then that something being useful towards something bigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because that is the problem with a lot of these games, is you build the thing and it's just there and now you have it and it's like, what now? Like, it would be good to then manage it on a sort of macro scale would be kind of interesting. Yeah.
Or something like Factorio. You know, you land on a planet, there's some resources, you have to set up a system whereby you can just get all of these resources and it fed back into something. You know, it'd be awesome if they added like a factorial mini game to like EVE Online or something like that, where you could just go off, colonize like a cool little base on a planet, extract like all of the resources, but do it very efficiently. And you have to sort of make it so that all of this stuff can leave the planet regularly and, you know, get to where it needs to go. And sometimes it can be intercepted by pirates or whatever. And that would be awesome. I would love that. I would love to play that game. But again,
can you imagine playing Civ where when your city gets to a certain point, you have to go and city skyline that city?
That'd be awesome.
Then, so you then spend 25 hours playing City Skylines, come back to Civ like three weeks later,
Hitler on your doorstep with like 50 howitzers. No!
While you've been building that motorway, we're here.
Oh shit! I would love that. That would be like my dream game. But again, I think it'd be too hard to do, and I think it'd be. It's not that the technology would hold it back. I think it would just be too hard to get it right so that people would want to play it and it would not be just a big fucking complicated mess of shit.
Did you ever play a game? It was a Games Workshop game. It looked like Settlers of Catan before Settlers of Catan existed. It was like a series of hexagonal tiles. Was it called Citadels and Cityscapes or something? Let me just Google it.
He's Googling it.
So what else have you been playing this week, Sips? Have you played anything good this week?
No, that's it. I played that, and off and on I've been playing The Division, which everybody seems to dislike it, but for some reason I actually kind of like it so far. I haven't gotten to the end game yet, so
yeah,
maybe it'll get grindy. But
I still haven't installed it. I will, I promise, but I'm so busy. I had no internet at home, and so one of the things I was doing, I've got internet now, so hopefully I'll just be back in Dota. But one of the things I've been doing every day is doing like one of the runs on Binding of Isaac. So they've added this in Binding of Isaac expansion Afterbirth. There's basically this daily challenge which Nilesy and Rithian are into.
Right.
And did you ever play Binding of Isaac?
No.
It's played it briefly, like not enough to fully appreciate how like people love that game, don't they? It's like a mini cult.
It's pretty old school,
yeah.
And like in many ways it's like a bullet hell, and combined with a sort of very randomized RPG system of stacking items together and getting a lot of synergy. And man, I've really enjoyed it. So this week I did the daily sort of challenges where it starts you with a character who's already sort of got an item or something like that that's pretty rare and unusual.
Yeah.
And so you play the game, and every run is always totally different. I've played maybe like 20 runs this week, and every one, my character is completely different in so many ways. Like one of my guys is surrounded by orbiting like creatures who shoot shit. One of them is like a giant fly. One of them like laser beams. Anyway, I finished it. I killed Mum and Mum's heart 11 times. So then I unlocked all of the special stuff. And that unlocks the two areas from the rebirth, which are the cathedral and like Sheol, which is like super hell. And man, it's great. It's like you go up to heaven and hell are like the two sort of end gamey places. And so I killed I killed Isaac, who's the boss of cathedral, with the blue baby, which is like really hard to do. And that unlocks an item on Isaac called the D6, right? And so whenever a new item drops in like a treasure room, you can re-roll it. And so it's really powerful because you can basically say, oh, this is a crappy item, I'll re-roll it. And you basically get like two chances to get something good that synergizes with you. And man, it feels great playing Binding of Isaac. You can become very, very, very powerful. Once you get a feel for the controls, it just becomes very satisfying to go through the levels and even like after I've played like a bunch of runs this week, it feels like I've not even like scratched the surface of items. So I've kind of finished the game in a sense. I haven't finished the game in that I haven't unlocked hardly anything in the game. I've not really killed the bosses in Afterbirth or gone through that stuff. But I also killed Mega Satan, who's the boss of
nice.
Sheol, and it's
Mega
it's,
Satan.
He's
Mega
fucking
Satan
nails, and man, it's great because It's got a really good progression in that game. You know, you start off when you're quite noob and you have to fight Mom, and you do it and you win, and it's like fucking fantastic. And you're like, man, that was really satisfying. That was hard, but I did it. And then you do it again, and then it unlocks more stuff. So it's like, okay, there's now two more floors to kill with much, much harder things and another boss. And then after that, it's like, okay, there's another floor, another boss, another floor, another boss. And it kind of is, it's great. It's a little bit like, I love that roguelike, that game, like the FTL, the roguelike game, where there's so many like randomized things that happen, that every game is different. And sometimes you can get lucky and sometimes you can get unlucky. But the best games are those like Binding of Isaac, where even if you're unlucky, there's still things you can do. So, for example, there's like a dice room, okay, that you can find. Yeah. And if you step on the dice, it will re-roll all of your items. So I was like just the most gimped character, right? And I was like, oh, I need to restart because I'm just struggling through. And then I found a dice room. I was like, oh, holy fucking shit. I re-rolled all of my items. And suddenly I'm like firing fucking laser beams that cover the entire screen. I'm using a completely different set of stuff. Or like, you know, oh man, it was amazing. I've been completely converted because I wasn't really a Binding of Isaac fan. I thought, oh, it's too hard, it's too complicated, I can't do it.
Yeah, I think I'm like that. I've heard of it and I know bits and pieces about it, but I don't have any appreciation for how good of a game it is, sort of thing.
Like, yeah, same.
I haven't played it enough.
Man, I'll have to share it with you because, man, I can see why Niles has had such a passion for so long. And a lot of people play a lot of Binding of Isaac.
Yeah, a lot of people play.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And, yeah.
I might have to try it out.
By the way, Mighty Empires, for anyone wondering, was the name of the board game I was talking about, which was Mighty Empires. It was an old, old Games Workshop game. It was still made when they did miniatures under Citadel Miniatures, which I think was a company that was presumably absorbed by Games Workshop to make miniatures for them. But it was, you had a bunch of hexes, like Settlers of Catan, you turn them all the other way up, and then you drew them and you built a map. But what you were meant to do was then, for each battle on the Mighty Empires map, the end goal was that would then be a Warhammer Fantasy battle. So you wouldn't just roll a couple of dice. You'd go spend a weekend fighting that battle between the orcs and the men at this river crossing. So you'd have to set up your Warhammer Fantasy Battles map to sort of match the terrain that the tiles were on. So it was like a way of managing your campaign. That was the dream. And we were like, this would never happen. Can you imagine it? This was in the 80s when computers were still shit. And that's basically what Total War is. And it's like now it's a game that exists. So it just blows my mind.
And here's Warhammer Total War coming out pretty soon, isn't it?
Warhammer Total, yeah, that's exactly it is exactly what Mighty Empires was in the 80s in my imagination, and now here it is on the computer.
Fuck,
May 24th.
Yeah,
it's coming out.
There it is. Only the AI will probably be garbage because God bless them, they can't code AI to save their lives, those boys. But they'll give it a go.
Honestly, Warhammer is what Total War has needed for a long fucking time. You know, it's needed fantasy. It's needed big old ogres stomping around and, you know, giant fucking monsters. And it's needed that Warhammer feel to make it better. Because I personally not a fan of Total War. I've played all of them.
No.
I really can't stand them, though. I can't stand the battles. I can't stand the way it sort of functions. And do you know what? The very first PC game I ever played was a game called Shadow of the Horned Rat.
Okay.
Which is a Warhammer game.
It was a Warhammer game,
and it was like Total War Warhammer. You know, had your a little army, and it was a little sort of campaign army, and you sort of fought. I mean, I remember it very nostalgically and fondly, but I think if I saw it again today,
it was decent.
I think it looked terrible.
No,
but that was the first
awful,
PC game I had.
It was good at the time.
I think that sort of spoiled Total War games for me because I was always hoping there would be these cool stuff, you know, and it wasn't. Total War was just pretty boring. I mean, I don't want to say war is boring, right? But and these battles are boring, but they kind
war
of
is
are
boring.
Boring.
It was like, it was really good. I mean, Rome Total War, the first one, the originally Medieval Total War, felt really good, and then the second one was really good. Shogun, like the Total War Shogun 2, was the best that they've made, in my opinion. It was incredible. It was a genuinely really, really good game. But the problem is, all right, you know, maybe you find the battles boring or whatever, but the AI in the battles is routinely, at release, just unplayable. Like in Empire, you would have these sieges, and the game was broken. The AI would never attack. if you couldn't leave your citadel because then they would easily win. So you just had to wait out the battle timer. And it would be like, you would have to tick the option that says, please limit battles to 1 hour. So you'd have to tick 1 hour and then fast forward the game and wait about 8 minutes for it to fast forward through the hours. Everyone just stands there on the battlements and his guys all stand there watching from afar. And that was like the average siege in Empire for me. Or they would just go, hey, cavalry are quick. So they'll get to the enemy first. So the cavalry, the enemy cavalry just runs at you. You obliterate them. And then his infantry come to you. You obliterate them because you've got cavalry and they haven't. It's like, well, what could did you guys not test this? Like, that's the problem I have with the game is that AI is awful.
I think that this is the worry that I'm going to have with Warhammer. I think that it's not just the individual AI of like that stuff. It's the individual AI of your own troops too, right? It's so fiddly to tell them exactly where you want them to be, and they fucking make these weird decisions, and there's a lot of weird like stuff about charging into flanking, and it's all just a bit messy. Yeah. I mean, I love looking at and reading about old battles on Wikipedia or whatever, and you see how, you know, these things went like a classic, like, oh, you know, they were in a ravine and there was a hill on this side and the archers were here and they cavalry charged around the side, and you know, I want to play that, but this fucking game has always made it so awkward and fucking shitty that it's torture. And also, you are controlling a bunch of identical, faceless, nameless minions who are kind of, there's no invested feel to any of them, you know. I think even back in the day, like when I played Shadow of the Horned Rat, that was the first one I played, the way the sort of campaign worked was that you started off with a group of horsemen and a group of infantry, and they were named, you know, your guys. And then as it went on, you recruited other bands of people, like a band of archers and a cannon and stuff like that. And you could recruit like a bunch of pikemen, and they would be named. They would have like a kind of story behind them. And so at least then when you built your army, it felt like you were kind of going in with this thing that was sort of, you were attached to. Whereas I think in Total War, it's more like I've got 5 units of halberds, 5 units of longer halberds, 5 units of short halberds, 5 units of swords halberds, 5 units of mounted halberds, 5 units of fuck off! I don't care! They're all the same! It doesn't help me, right? There's no uniqueness. There's no, everyone, you could have like light armored, medium armored, medium light armored, medium heavy armored, skirmishing light heavy armored, medium fucking armored shielded. Who cares? They don't mean anything. It's annoying. I wish it was like just one. Like
I played
swordsman.
I played like very briefly Total War games, right? And is it like a fairly common thing when you play it a lot to just auto resolve like the fights, or is the thing with
yes,
that game you have to
it
do
really
the fights because that's like
just
the main part
the
of the game?
Just to skip the entire game. That's what you're doing when you're auto resolving, by the way. Well, you are skipping the entire game. You might as well be playing fucking chess.
Yeah, because I just thought that maybe the game was really good, like on a grand strategy level. You know, like making a granary and you know having a, you know, dude become a king and stuff like that. And I just found the fights really tedious in the end. Like, sort of like what Lewis was saying, you just have these columns of guys and they just seem to gyrate around against each other. And it just didn't really feel that fun. I just auto-resolved them all the time and then just
stopped
playing
shortly
after. Some of
them I did. The ones that were obvious that I was going to win or lose, I did. But the big battles, I mean, there are some... You can have some great battles in it, really. There's nothing quite like it, but the problem is that you need to get all these community mods that actually fix the game, because the battles are so miserably awful otherwise, and the AI is so clueless and very easy to manipulate. This is the problem I have with a lot of games' AI, is once you figure out what they analyze about what you're doing, it's very easy to manipulate the AI with sort of feints and things, and they always buy it. Like if they code some AI, they need to put in some... It needs to not respond that way.
Yeah.
Like, instead of just having case X, we do this. Case Y, we do that. It's like, well, then I just make out like I'm going to do this. You guys do this stupid thing. And then, bam, I just own you at the same point every time. It's stupid.
I think what pisses me off about this game, most of all, right, is that it's taking up that space in the game industry, right? In that these guys are known for making this game. It's like, imagine a Football Manager.
Right.
They were Football Manager, the kings of Football Manager, right?
They are.
There
yeah.
are not very many other people making Football Manager games.
Oh, there okay? are, but they're all awful. Go on.
Right. The problem is that no one else is making these types of games because Total War is such a big pioneer in the space. And the things they do, everyone thinks, oh, I have to do like them. Because they try and copy and they shouldn't be copying this game. I'm angry about it being not what I want it to be. I was in my temple.
I find it very frustrating when they don't make a game.
When they don't make it for me.
But think about how many games are there like
Maybe I'm
Civ?
Wrong.
And Endless Legend is the first game to come along that's anything like Civ in ages. And it's basically a fantasy setting because otherwise people will compare it to Civ. Like, give me a historical 4X game that isn't Civilization that's come out in the last 5 years.
There's the Europa Universalis and the Crusade right. Kings and all these things.
They are very different.
Colonization, which is made by the same guys, but still.
It's not in the Civ 5 engine, it's in the Civ 4 engine.
Yeah, that's true.
So that came out around Civ 4. And the original is way better than the remake, I think.
The original is really good. So I remember good. Playing it.
There's actually an original, I was going to play it on the live stream, there's actually a Windows open colonization open
it's
source
it's
thing.
A great game
a little bit like
it is
OpenTTT,
a great
but
game
but not as good OpenTTT man I could play that
yeah we yeah. should play that I love that game
we should yeah Pyrian have you played Factorio
no sir
oh man
oh,
I think you
God.
Might like it maybe
it looks very micromanaging
me and Sips we have played 15 hours of Factorio together
yeah I saw the every time I look on Steam Friends you guys have Factorio in it up. And I'm like, wow, that must be good. And then I watched a video of it, and I was like, I ain't got time.
We're finished
life.
Now. We did it. We finished the game.
We finished
well
it.
Done. Well
In
done.
In 15 hours.
It was really satisfying.
It was really satisfying. Yeah. So much so that actually I've been playing it in my spare time as well. Because
wow.
why not? You know, sometimes you just need to go back and make it better. And I mean, there
I
was
think the community
lots of room for improvement after 15
will
hours.
Add a lot of things
I mean, there was,
to it.
I think if we play it again, I think we should not have the drone network, though. I feel like the game loses its, I don't know.
Purity.
It's like in OpenTTD when you get planes. It's just like, fuck it, I don't care anymore. I don't care about my network. I don't, you know, just shove a million planes in there, move them from the farthest places and make the money, and I'm done with this game sort of thing.
You're right. We should ban drones if we play it again. But I think we should wait until there's some big community mods or big updates to the game.
Yeah.
Because I think it will continue to be updated and added to, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite bit about OpenTTD is when you've built a little station, like I always spend the money in building the bigger stations, like in the middle of, as close as I can to the middle of a city that's clearly going to grow. And then you play it for long enough, and suddenly you've got this metropolis around your station, and it's just trains. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, we should play it.
You could encourage that, actually. You can encourage that by like building the roads, like building roads for them.
I like all that.
Building like railway tracks over there. Building like bridges for them to expand to and stuff.
Yeah.
I tend to sort of just base everything around one city when I play that game because I like that idea that your sort of links into the
your
city
local
are,
business.
Are what are growing it sort of thing. So like I'll always have a big station and then lots of transfers that get people to the city and out.
This
and
is
stuff.
What I'm talking about with getting into the RP though, because then you can think about, hey, look, I'm a local businessman. Yeah. You know, there's like billboards.
Bumford
Dave,
2016 regional
That's
councilman.
Right.
That's right. I'm going to do
stuff
for
you. I've got a little
bit
of money. Yeah. I'm going to start a bus route.
Yeah.
I'm going to work my way up.
I got a wife.
Trains.
I got 2.5 kids, and I drive a
Hyundai
family sedan. Yeah. Vote for me. Yeah.
There was a game. Yeah. There was a game in the early 90s called A-Train. A-Train.
I remember that game.
Yeah.
It was a bit like OpenTTD, but more on the cargo side, right? Like,
it was, yeah. But
you had these
little
blocks that you had to shift around and stuff.
That's right. Like you go pick up the blocks, and move them to somewhere where they wanted triangles or something. Like, you move things. And
it wasn't incredibly
kind of
intuitive, though. It was a hard game to play.
It was awful. Yeah. But they still... Yeah. It was fun. It was fun because you built the city up. It was like that. So by supplying things to the city, you built up, and you'd have these little warehouses of blocks. You'd move blocks. It was really cool. But they still make it. It's like a regular series in Japan, I think. A-Train series.
Oh, it would be. Fucking Japan and trains. They love it.
So it's a series of train simulation games. Listen to this. A-Train, the original, I click on that, there it is, right? A-Train 3 was the one that we actually played that became known as A-Train in the West. Do you know how many A-Train games there have been? Let me list them to you, Sips. Are you ready? A-Train, A-Train 2, A-Train 3, MD A-Train, A-Train 4, A-Train 5, A-Train Z, A-Train 6, A-Train 2001, A-Train the 21st Century, A-Train I, A-Train 7, A-Train EZ, A-Train HX, 8, DS, 9, 3D. 3D! I want to see it!
Fuck.
A-Train 3D.
That's too much A-Train for me.
Of A-Train. But man, I could fucking play A-Train.
It was bad,
but it was also good.
Do you know what, though? If you have someone to hold your hand in these games, you can have such a good time. Like, you know, it really helped that I was able to sort of get us... Like, when me and Sips played Factorio, I kind of... Because I played a little bit on my own, so I kind of had figured out some of the stuff. So we weren't, like... getting stuck, right? It was really nice to actually play a game with someone who knew what they were doing. Like, me and Duncan played a board game the other night, and neither of us really knew what we were doing. And we'd figured it out by the end, but it took us about 2 hours of frustration before we really... Whereas if one of us had known how to play the game...
Mm. Yeah.
And could have, like, you know... It wasn't like a game where... But sometimes when one of you knows how to play, it's just a fucking stomp, okay? That obviously doesn't help. But man, it's good to like bring along people to games that you love and share them with them, because we've been doing that a bit lately, haven't we?
The nice thing with Factorio is that it's a bit of a puzzle game, but it's something you do together. And like, you know, we built a factory and we tried to make it somewhat efficient. It wasn't at all. We probably played the game wrong, according to people who play the game all the time, but it was really satisfying building our own thing the way that we thought it would work. You know, chopping and changing it when we needed to, and making things a little bit more efficient if we needed to, or fixing problems that were there and stuff. But it's just nice working with somebody towards something, right? Instead of having to be against somebody, or, you know, just locked into some grind fest on your own, you know, where nobody can really help you and stuff. Like, it was just it was really refreshing, actually. It was a really nice experience. And like, I don't know, OpenTTD is a little bit like that too sometimes, you know, like... You sort of just the way that the game evolves as it goes on, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I need to use some of your track to like get across or something. And you know what I mean? There's always like these little sort of things that you do together when you're playing with people, and it's nice. It's just fun. Mm. It's just a really good time.
It's like when we did the Anno 1404 list, and it was nice because
working together, that's the difference. I think you can do that on OpenTTD. We can work on this, own the same company and share the same trains and manage the same system. I think that we probably should because I think that that's how
sounded very Swedish there. We should.
this is like most of the games, that board games that I enjoy playing, are kind of cooperative board games where you work together towards the same goal rather than, you know, aim to knock the other people out. I think that building and stuff and creating and working together on certain games works way better. It wouldn't work on something like Civ, but that kind of feels like a different...
I think it would work in something like Civ if you had a really brutal and competent AI to play against together, you know, where it was really a challenge, you know, and you couldn't just sort of... pick up on AI patterns and work around them, sort of thing. You know, like it was just a challenge, sort of thing.
I think if it was real time too, right, and there was this constant pressure to, you know, I think that's the thing. I think with turn based, that doesn't lend so well to co-op. I think turn based works well with versus, whereas I think in something like OpenTTD, I think we'll have a lot of satisfaction. I think the problem with OpenTTD, as opposed to Factorio, is that one of the nicest things about Factorio is that it had a very complex end goal, which is build the rocket and send it into space, okay?
Yeah.
That is something which OpenTTD and other, sometimes other co-op games sort of lack. But Anno is a similar thing. One of the end goals is to build a big cathedral, which requires a whole shitload of stuff. And I think that's what we did, was it, PFLAX?
Yeah,
we aimed to build, like, the monument. And so, yeah, I mean, it was super satisfying playing that co-op. It wouldn't have worked playing it versus... I don't think it would have been really.
I quite like the idea that you're just trying to work together to build something rather than just try to fight each other. And I say that having played lots of games.
Yeah,
like that.
Creating yourself these goals and these milestones is so important, I think, and it gives you this real sense of closure that, like, because I'm kind of done with Binding of Isaac now. I'm like, okay, I've done what I set out to do, which was sort of finish the game, unlock these items, and. I'll share it with other people and I'll show them how much I enjoyed it and try and get them into it. But in the same way, like, it's not like it doesn't matter. Every game you have to kind of get to. Some games I think are a bit problematic in that you just play them forever because they don't have this end game closure. But I think that variety is. Having had no internet and being able to play no Dota for a month. It's opened my eyes to, like, other games that I'm missing out on. And so I'm not going to come back to Dota in the same way.
You animal. How could you abandon me?
You are an animal.
I think I will play it, but I won't play it the way I've played it previously.
You mean you'll play it well? Is that what you're saying?
I won't play it exclusively.
It's going to get his game face back on, get back into the track pants and microwave meals.
I've been... get it, yeah. Get back in shape.
He's just going to get right back into the zone, the Dota zone, the all
push it
consuming.
To the limit.
Yeah,
I'll run along and I'll be in a car ahead of you, dangling some tangos or something from a stick, just dangling the tangos. You'll be running after them, lifting logs. Yeah, working it out.
Me and Pyrion were talking about this before we started recording, saying, you know, like general gaming habits, right? Like you pick up something. You binge on it for a bit, you really enjoy it, and then you get to the point where you're like, yeah, I'm done with this game. You know, I may have finished it, I may not have finished it, but I'm happy enough with my experience from this game where I'm just ready to, like, move on and play something else. Or, you know, sometimes you pick up a game 3 days before, you know, some huge release. Like, I've done this before where I've picked up a game and thought, fuck, I could really see myself playing a lot of this game. But I started playing it 3 days before, like, a WoW expansion came out or something. And then it was like, after 3 days, boom. Like, I'd never touch it again. And it's not because I disliked it. It's because it's the kind of gamer I am. Like, I'm pretty fickle in that sense, where I'll pick up something, play it for 3 or 4 days, play it a lot, and then just move on to something else. Because I've just... Yeah. It satisfied my craving for that, you know, like, point-and-click adventure game or... building a city or just doing something. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to move on. And then I'll move on to, like, a totally different genre or just pick up something that's new or whatever. I like it, though. You know,
I think
the variety is great. Yeah.
With everyone. Like, you know, I think it's to do with memory, though. I think, like, if something isn't holding your attention or something, you like a book or something you're reading, you just will forget to pick it up. It'll be there and you'll be like, I'll forget to pick it up. And then after a certain amount of time has passed, it'll be too long to pick it up again. You think, well, okay, it's been 2 weeks since I last picked that book up. I can't remember where I was. Oh, maybe I'll pick it up, but maybe not. And then, you know, it's like that with games. And I think, well, I'm guilty of this with things like Skyrim and Fallout and just stopping. Like, one of the things I did on Fallout 3 was I just stopped at a certain point. I just didn't come back. And I don't know why, I just did. And I obviously, at some point, I thought, oh, shit, it's been too long. And if I logged into that character, I'd think, oh, fuck, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I don't want to go in, like, back into the game. I guess what I'm worried about is that games have this difficulty curve, right, where they slowly ramp up. And, you know, if you play them all in one go or regularly and you get through them, that's how it works, that's how it's designed. Whereas if you take a two-week break, like, towards the end of the game... when you come back, it's like, oh, I can't really remember what I'm doing. I don't want to have to relearn.
Skyrim and Fallout are weird because they're open enough where you can sort of get caught up into almost insignificant stuff in the game. Like, I did this with Fallout 4, and to some extent I did this with Skyrim as well, where I played it enough And I didn't actually complete the main storylines. And those are meant to be like the, you know, you do this, the huge arcing main storyline so that, you complete the game, if you like. But there's still a lot to do. But I never did those because I was just too busy going off doing my own thing. And
that's what happened.
In a way, in my mind, I've finished those games because the things that I got up to and the things that I did that weren't the main storyline were enough for me. So like, I did something really dumb. Like I finally got a house in Skyrim. And when I got the house, I was like, yeah, fuck, I've got this huge mansion out here with like all of my junk and like all of the followers that I've picked up until now. And I'm done. Like, I don't feel like doing anything else in the game now. Like
always amazes me when you get people who still play that one game over and over again. They play all the mods, they replay it in different ways. It's the same.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind. Like, I enjoyed Fallout, but I haven't played it in months. I'm just sort of like,
so Fallout 3 was the thing that I did that with. And people always said to me, what about when you meet your dad and Liam Neeson and all this? And I was like, what are you talking about? I never did any of that in Fallout 3 because I never got that far in the main storyline. I'd obviously given up before that happened. So when I went back to Fallout 3 and played it with the mods and stuff, I realized that I had done 97% of the fucking game. I just hadn't done that 3% that was the main storyline thing that I didn't want to just, couldn't be bothered to get around to.
Fallout 3 was a funny one for me because you get to Megaton and whatever, and you're like, yeah, okay, you know, the main story is chasing in the footsteps of your dad and trying to find him or whatever. And I completely just did not. Like, I'd never went to, like, the DC sort of metro area. I was just messing around, like, you know, exploring, finding stuff. And then I happened upon the garage, you know, and then underneath the garage, there's, like, the part of the storyline, the main storyline, where, like, you find your dad in, like, that cryo chamber. So I happened upon that. And just skipped like everything leading up to that point, like all of the storyline leading up to that point, because I just randomly found this place and I started exploring it. And there was a door that led into the vault underneath it. And you're like, oh, fuck, this is kind of cool. Like, what's this doing here? And then there's like a fucking cryo chamber with your dad in it, or he's been like strapped into some VR thing or whatever. It's like, Dad, what are you doing here? It's like, fuck, I don't know where I am with the story now. Like, I've skipped, like, it feels like I've skipped like 50% of it because I've just like found him down here. Like, and then he just sort of like, okay, son, let's go fix the pumps. I'm like, what? What am I doing? It's like, it's so weird.
Do you know what? I love that the fact that they've actually allowed you to do that. You know, I think that many times games will gate you and that will be permanently locked beyond a locked door that says, this door can never be opened or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'll come along with some fucking quest NPC and she'll be like, oh, let me just pick this lock. And then it opens and you go in there. It's like, oh, yeah, okay. So I was at this garage, like outside the door to where my dad was the whole time. You know, it's kind of...
He was just in there. You could probably hear me fumbling around and swearing like at things falling down and stuff. But no, you're not allowed to go in.
As long as you can get your head canon like comfortable with that, that's okay. Yeah. I think that's what it's about. It's about, I like to make up these stories. So, you know, I like that sliding doors kind of thing where those missed opportunities just happened. You know, who knows, Pyrion, we may have met each other in life at some point, like maybe when I was 10 and you were like 15, we were at Disneyland, you know, and we were on the same ride, or we like met, you know.
Yeah.
We can't remember it. There's all sorts of these. I love those little moments where you see, because I remember one of the particular ones I remember was that someone took a picture at Disneyland or whatever, and they found out that their future wife actually was in the background of that picture.
Wow.
Like 20
That's
years
crazy.
Earlier.
That's
and so
crazy.
They were looking through their old family pictures and they realized that they had two pictures that were almost the same. And they realized that they were in each other's pictures as kids.
Holy crap.
When that shit happens, you have that moment where you're like, and I mean, nothing to that extent has happened to me, but I've had moments where I've thought like, fuck, are people watching me? Like, am I living like the Truman Show here or something? Like, what the hell is going on? Because like sometimes something happens
you,
and you're like,
what do you
what
mean?
The fuck, like, hang on a second. Maybe like, you know, maybe all along, like, you know, the government's just been like watching my every move. I'm like an experiment or something, because that's just too crazy to have actually happened. Do you ever get that? No.
I've never had those moments in my life that were that crazy, that I thought I was Jesus and that the whole universe revolved around me or anything like that. I think people
I didn't think I was Jesus, but I thought, hang on a second, like this is just a little bit too convenient. Like maybe, you know, maybe I'm fucking like the butt of some intergalactic joke or something, you know, like maybe like I live in this like jail thing that aliens set up and they're all laughing at me because like I just fucking masturbate too much maybe and you know, do
I thought
some
we
other
they
shit.
Were watching you through your iPad camera. They're like chuffing away.
Didn't we talk about simulation theory last time? I thought we talked about this last time on the podcast.
Maybe.
Oh my god.
Maybe this will be the new Wolfenstein.
Maybe like it got deleted from my memory.
Do you remember Wolfenstein, guys?
Fuck, man. Has anyone played the latest Wolfenstein game?
Man, anyone want to come out? I bought it on the Steam sale.
It's like
Christmas.
2 or 3 years ago, for sure.
It was like £4. And it was, because I didn't buy very much on the Steam sale at Christmas, but it was that one day when it was like 80% off, and Terps had told me that it was good because he was sick and he played it when he was sick. And so I thought, if I ever get sick, I'll play Wolfenstein. And so, but my God, it's like 40. It's like £50 for the New Order and the Old Blood at the moment on Steam.
Fuck.
But I bought it for like £5.
Nice.
I suggest, that's an interesting thing I suggest, like, just keep in the back of your mind a game that you think is going to be worth playing, and then have it installed on your computer in case of emergency.
I did that with Mad Max, the Mad Max game.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just like, I bought it for like £3 or something. It was in sale, and I was like, I don't know. Is this game going to be good? Maybe. I'll try it. I liked Fury Road or whatever, so I'll give it a try. And it was like pretty good. But I don't know if it was good because I only paid £3 for it. Because maybe full price, I would have been disappointed.
Have you seen the state of the Steam store at the moment?
Oh, no. It's a fucking disaster.
Let me list you the shit that's available to me, all right? All right, The Division, all right? So that's a big title. And then Chronix Action Champion, which is an awful title for a game I'm never going to play. Arma 2, which has been out for fucking ever. The Vive, which I've already pre-ordered. Soccer Manager 2015, free to play. That's going to be garbage. Hitman Absolution, very old, wasn't very well received. Steam Link, don't care. Defcon, again, very old game, already got it. Steam Controller, not interested. Arena Cyber Evolution, don't care. Free to play. Way of the Samurai 3, don't care. Club Manager 2015, don't care. Battleborn, don't really want to play that. Red Crucible Firestorm, free to play, don't care. And then pre-orders for the Banner Saga 2. And then I look through the other titles that are available, and there's just nothing. Until I get down to a certain title called... One second. Let me just get the full title because I want to get this right. It's cool.
What list are you looking at right now? Because I'm looking at top sellers right now.
Right. I was looking at all new releases, okay?
Suggested.
So I want you to type in for me, Sips. I want you to type in Candice. Candice. And look at the game. Candice DeBebe's Incredibly Trick Lifestyle. That's the name of the game.
Incredibly
this has mostly positive reviews.
I don't know
it's
how.
15.
It's had 15 reviews, mostly positive. Was released on the 22nd of March, which was
2 days ago.
Days ago. It is a adventure indie RPG maze. It actually uses the tag meme.
Yep.
So I don't know. Is Candice DeBebe a thing? Like...
No. It's just a piece of shit game that someone's made. It's like a gag, right? So they've made this gag game. Just looking at it makes me want to uninstall all the other games I've ever purchased and just go live in a house in the middle of nowhere somewhere.
But these games thrive off of YouTubers, though, right? Like, because you know that a game like this will be picked up by a popular YouTuber and... they're going to load it up and be like, what the hell? Like, this is crazy and stuff. And people will watch it and stuff. And the game will sell off the back of that because everybody will want to recreate that hilarious experience for themselves. And how much is it? $3.39. So it's not, it's not 10p like Bad Rats was. Because Bad Rats is like one of the most sold games on Steam, but it's because it was 10p. So people would just buy it for a joke. Present to give to their friends
and
stuff.
Somebody bought it for me.
It's like those movies, though, that are so bad that they're the most popular. Like, sometimes it's like the producers. People fight over having the worst movie, the worst game on Steam. People proactively try to make the worst game, the worst movie.
Candice DeBebe's Incredibly Trick Lifestyle. Have you read the about this game?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Read it.
What does it say?
Read it out loud.
All right. So here is, let me just go back to it. All right, I'm Candice Innit. That's me up in the photo, the biggest one, as I am well important. And this is an action RPG all about the incredibly trick lifestyle and me and my mates. So basically, I was going to get myself a new fake tan one day when an evil singing sensation named Crystal turns up and starts causing havoc, innit? Naturally, I wasn't having that and tried to stop her. Sadly, I failed and she stole my mate's tanning business and so on. I kind of didn't want to read it.
It's just fucking a Unity Engine piece of shit that's been thrown together in about 5 seconds flat.
You guys are slamming this. I just bought it. And
did you actually?
I did, yeah. Oh. Because I hate myself and I want to die. So I didn't just buy it. Okay. But right. I don't know. Like, how did this get mostly positive 15 reviews? 73%
because they got their mates to vote on it. It's obvious. Nobody else is gonna ever buy
it. Everyone's saying, oh, this is a hilarious lol, this game's so bad, it's good.
It ain't.
There's a review here that says, just simply don't, full stop.
Yeah. That I like that.
After 6.4 hours as well, this guy actually probably finished the game.
He finished the game.
Yeah.
Fair play to him. Well done, sir.
Yeah. I've got a thing here. Thea, The Awakening.
Hmm.
Recommended by Andre D.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of our Dota friends.
Yeah.
He's written a fucking like 2-page review of this game.
Yeah, he does that quite a bit. Yeah.
What, Candice DeBebe?
86 hours he's played it, and he likes it.
It's got very positive reviews, over 706 reviews. That's impressive.
You know what I find interesting? I like the whole queue thing that Steam does. And it's funny sometimes. Like, I'll explore my queue for you guys today, all right? You ready for this?
Yeah.
I have 11 remaining. Okay, so Smite is my first one. I already
played
it.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Second, Total War Warhammer, which I will never play, but fair enough.
Pre-order. So that's a pre-order.
Homeworld Remastered Collection. I vaguely remember playing Homeworld.
How
back
old
in the day.
Is Homeworld?
It's pretty old, but this is the Remastered Collection anyway. Next up, Dark Souls 3. I'm not a fan of Dark Souls. I've tried to play Dark Souls in the past, and I didn't find it like very enjoyable. I can see the appeal, though. I get the hype and stuff.
Dark Souls, we could just talk about 10 seconds about Dark Souls, is that when I've played it, you do want to smash your controller on the ground, and you throw the controller because it's so frustrating and bullshit. But when you pull off some insane fucking skill combo, you feel like the most, biggest badass in the world. It's weird, really weird.
Yeah.
It goes from...
I get that. Yeah. I just don't want to experience it. Like, I don't want to go through the negative to get to the positive. But yeah. I understand the appeal of that.
It's like one of those Mario Maker games, right, where you die 50 times, but eventually you come through, like, the perfect run, and you slowly learn, and then you become a master. That's what it's like. That's Dark Souls.
All right. Yeah. Next up, Path of Exile, which is, you know, that like, better Diablo, according to people.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to try it, but I haven't.
Diablo for nerds.
It's cool. Yeah. It's in my queue. CSGO, I've never played it. It's apparently pretty good.
I used to play
a lot of Counter-Strike back in the day, but I haven't played it like recently, and I certainly haven't played CSGO. What's next? Next up, Polaris Sector, which is a simulation strategy 4X space grand strategy game. I've never heard of it before, but you go.
Oh, it's just newly released.
It came out 2 days ago, same as with Candice DeBebe. so those two are neck and neck now. The final four, Way of the Samurai 3, which I think Pyrion mentioned possibly in the new releases.
I did, yeah.
Sheltered, which kind of looks a bit like This War of Mine. Remember that?
Yeah.
This War of Mine was awful. I hated it.
Oh, I liked it. I thought it was good. Hyperdimension Neptunia Action Unleashed. I mean, Steam, literally, I've never played an anime game once in my life, and this one is quite clearly an anime game. I don't know why you're recommending this to me, unless maybe you think I need to try something new or whatever. But
can I, you know what, Sips, I'm in the same boat. Somebody bought me Hatoful Boyfriend as a joke. I never installed it, and since that point, every time I go to my thing, it's all, how about some fucking anime period? I'm like, no, like, I want to tick, don't show me this shit ever again. If a game has the tag anime, don't show me that. I don't know. I want to say, here's a tag I don't ever want to see, anime. If the tag anime appears, banish it from Steam for me. My personal view, it's invisible.
Battlefleet Gothic Armada, which isn't even out yet, so it's a pre-order thing, I guess. And finally, Arma 3.
Okay.
Which I've never played. That was my cue. I don't know why. I mean, there's better games on here to recommend to me that I might buy, but like none of those I would have bought, I don't think, except for Candice
the Baby. What do you think about like the curators and stuff? Do you follow any of like the curators, the people who like, you know, suggest games?
Yeah, I do. And it's just a lazy way of, because I still read PC Gamer and I still read Rock, Paper, Shotgun as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just a lazy way of getting almost like a recommendation or a review out of them, you know, if I don't have time to read it or I've fallen a bit behind on reading it or whatever. I find it kind of useful, but at the same time, it's such a weird thing, you know, like nowadays there's so many games coming out, like way, like more than there ever has been before, right? Like there's such a huge amount of choice of games to buy. There's all these early access games coming out, indie games coming out. There's all sorts of shit to try. And because we do what we do, we tend to, you know, my Steam library is fucking huge. Like, I have so many fucking games that I've never even installed, you know, like, let alone even thought about playing, sort of thing. And it's weird. I feel like I'd love to go back to the days where I was genuinely excited about a game coming out and reading about it. And, you know, months later, it finally came out and I would play it and, you know, experience it, enjoy it, and then sort of move on to the next thing. Instead of just being inundated with thousands of games and having all these like mini experiences, but never sticking to anything. Like it's hard to explain. It's really weird, but
I think it's weird because a game will come along that I become obsessed with, like say Dota, and play constantly. XCOM 2, finish that. Like I've never finished games and I could not wait to finish. I just wanted to see what happened. Like I was really caught up in the story and the my guys and trying to finish the game and see all the monsters and bosses and everything and get all the levels. I really, really was really, really into it. And I'm hesitant to start a new one because I know they're going to bring out the expansion. So I'm like, when the expansion comes out, I'm going to start again, do the whole thing again and stuff like that. Yeah.
There's a lot of mods for XCOM 2, though. Like I watch a guy play it. He's just done a playthrough on Legend. He's completed the game. It's very enjoyable to watch. His name is Christopher Odd, if you want to watch it as well. And he's going to start Season 2 soon, which is just going to be another playthrough. But he's got a couple of mods this time. So, like, he's got the blade mod so that your rangers never miss with their swords. And it just makes swords a bit better because they're kind of shit. And just things like that. So just a couple of little things to just make the second playthrough a little bit different, you know? Yeah. And I think that's a cool thing. XCOM 2 is really great, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a really good game.
Let me give you my cue because I haven't looked at it in a very long time. Okay.
All right.
But I've got 12 titles on it. Factorio is on there.
Yeah.
Which I know you guys are recommending. The Division is on there, which I know we were talking about maybe playing. Stardew Valley, which I kind of want to get into, but at the same time, I just really don't fancy just having to lug potatoes around in a barn. Like, that's too close to my real life anyway. For some reason, fucking Hyper Dimension Neptunia is on this shit. I did not fucking add this. I'm gonna click not interested. That is out of my list now.
It's a fucking conspiracy, okay?
It
I bet you they've paid money to appear in everybody's fucking queue for like a week or something,
for
and
real.
Then you'll never see it again. Because, like, that, what the fuck? I don't own a single game.
Yep.
That is any way related to that game, and it's my cue.
Yeah, it's utterly bizarre. Ark Survival Evolved, which
but then again, I just bought it as well because I hate myself, so I bought an anime game. And
for some reason, Night Online, like with a K, Night Online. No, not interested.
Night Online. Okay.
That We have had a great podcast. I'm going to just bookend this now
so we don't start rambling about Pyrion's Q. Come on, let me hear about what Pyrion's Q is. Check out games.
I don't want to promote these games that are probably shit and don't deserve even us mentioning.
Yeah.
You check out some games. Do you know what? I actually care a lot more about the people who've actually reviewed stuff. So based on Andre's fucking essay about whether that game, I'm going to pick that one up and have a go. And then
which
we'll
one? Hyper
back,
Dimension
right?
XU
right,
or
yeah,
whatever?
Report back.
Okay,
yeah, report.
Listen, before we bookend, we have a couple of questions. We'll bat through them quick, okay?
All right, real quick, quick fire round.
First one is from a man or a woman named Jet. Top games so far for this year, quickly.
XCOM.
Oh, yeah, XCOM 2 is so good.
Yeah, me too, XCOM 2. XCOM 2, in my opinion, is a masterpiece. Like, yeah. It's a fucking great game. And if it doesn't win Game of the Year for 2016, which it probably won't, but I think it should because it's fucking great.
It's brilliant.
It's really,
absolutely
really
brilliant.
Good.
Yep. Next.
Van Lutnant asks, this is a question for all of us again. What are your opinions on a trip to New Zealand? I get asked this all the time for some reason. Like,
too far. No thanks.
Yeah, me too. Too far. I got family and stuff. I'm not interested in sitting on a plane for like 24 hours or however long it takes to get there.
I am desperate to move to New Zealand and live there forever for the rest of my life. I think that when I get sick of this, that's where I'm going.
Cool. Wow.
I'm going to be there. I'm going to become
completely out of left field on that one. Like, 2-1.
It's like
two people who just don't want to go because
I was hoping to get me and Duncan were hoping to go to New Zealand this January, but we ended up not doing it because of various things. So maybe next January, next winter, we want to go there.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I would like to visit, maybe do a convention or something, but it's so far and I'm so lazy. And
yeah.
That's
you're happy where you are. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next. NP Manga Cat asks, this is a bit of a, well, it's probably going to be a quick one, but what is your opinion on having a relationship at a younger age, 10 to 15? Just curious. What do you think about that? You know, first time you ever kissed somebody, was it within that age range, 10 to 15? The thing is, you can't have a meaningful relationship between the age of 10 and 15 because you don't have a fucking clue about anything that life has in store for you or anything, right? Like,
no. And even when you're even from 16 to 30, you still don't really have a clue. So,
no, that's true, yeah. But
most relationships don't, you know, kind of really bed down to them till their mid-20s.
More power to you, though, if you enter a relationship between the ages of 10 and 15 and you stay with that person until the day you die.
As
like
long as you are
whatever,
between 10 and 15.
Yes.
As long as you're happy, that's cool. But I think between the age of 10 and 15, I think you should just like go out and have fun and do shit and not worry about relationships.
Just fucking drink Mountain Dew, eat Doritos, play video games.
Play lots of colonization.
Just
and
don't
be a filthy
whatever the kids are doing these days, playing colonization or whatever.
Listen to music, go to the disco, I don't know.
Do a roller skate with your friends. Anyway. Next one is from this last one. The Vault 13 Legend asks, first compliments. Love the Doritos podcast. Bravo, lads. That's nice. Thank you. Asks, what is the worst job you guys have had and why? Can you guys think of any jobs that you've had off the top of your head that were terrible?
All of them.
Yeah.
I didn't mind my jobs, but I had a paper route when I was really young and I was forced to do it to like teach me the value of work and money and stuff like that. I fucking hated it. And I used to dump all of the newspapers in a forest by my house and then go to my friend's house and play Nintendo instead.
Nice.
Oh my God. What a fucking guy.
Well, yeah, but I come from a place where it's like minus 40 for 6 months of the year and... Fucking hand delivering newspapers was the worst time of my life.
I think the worst time of my life is being forced to stand out on a sports field when in primary school with shorts on in the middle of fucking winter and like you know having to run around and like in the absolute freezing ass cold with shorts on. Fuck you for making me do that.
Yeah.
Whoever, Mrs. Burge or whatever your name was.
Yeah, where are you now, Mrs. Burge? That's right. I'm on a podcast and where are you? Probably just like retired and having a nice time or whatever. But still, the shorts, you fucking miss.
Can't believe it.
Yeah.
Right. Got anything else, PFAX? Worst job?
Bad jobs. Honestly, I've never had a job I enjoyed apart from this one. So I hated all of them. I hated working.
All of them.
I hated working for some asshole. And pretty much every job I had, every single manager I ever had was just an asshole. That's just something about
That's
being
just
a
how
manager
we roll.
That attracts assholes. You're not my manager. You're not the boss of me.
Cool.
Little do you know, PFAX.
Go on. Go on then. Fire me, Lewis. I'll walk out of this podcast right now. Yeah, sorry. That's fair enough. No, this like honestly, like I'm saying, this is literally, you know, in terms of jobs I've had, I've worked in a warehouse one summer. Just it was a pharmaceuticals warehouse. So the truck
man,
the truck
working
comes
in a warehouse
in.
Is pretty good though. I worked
awful.
In a warehouse. I
it was
enjoyed
awful.
It.
It was two good. People. It was me and one other guy, and he was at least mentally backwards, possibly.
And they
worse.
Had a massive over delivery of lube.
Oh, yeah. The lube. Yeah, we got
and
down
me
to
and
it.
This guy didn't know what to do with it. We just had this so much lube. Jeez.
Oh, man, the lube.
Yeah.
So, anyway, on that bombshell,
it was awful.
I suggest we say goodbye. Thank you for listening to this podcast. It's been about same length as last time, surprisingly. The time just went by a lot quicker this time.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let us know if you enjoy it and we'll carry on doing it. Hopefully we enjoy it. We're going to have to figure out a way to monetize this in some way. but we'll worry about that in future podcasts. Let us know what you think we should do.
Yeah, Lewis wants to go to New Zealand, so we have to somehow get some money
together. I do eventually want to
ship him off, yeah.
To go there. So, yeah, we'll need some funds to do
that. The downside of him going to New Zealand is that once he does that, we probably won't be able to do this podcast anymore. So, you have to weigh it up.
And no more Dota. So, yeah.
So, donate if you don't like the podcast, and don't donate if you want to see it continue in a weird way.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. See you next time, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.